also made it clear she was under his protection while the Queen was away. Her things had been moved to the top floor, into a room with space for Joseph. It was across the hall from the Dom's. Like him, she always had a gladiator at her door, willing to escort her throughout the Citadel. This time, she needed him to take her a little farther. "Crow, right?" she asked when she was in the hall. Beside her door, a young man pushed away from the wall and nodded.
"Yes, Miss Cherry, partner to heart."
"I need to drop Joseph off with the Dom, then head to the barracks." Crow's brow wrinkled.
"Ma'am, the barracks aren't the kind of place a lady would feel comfortable."
"Yeah," she breathed, well aware of that. "And I'm not a lady, just a merchant's girl. Where's Theo?"
"Follow me, Miss Cherry."
He winked at the boy before heading to the stairs. Down one level and a few halls over, Crow rapped at a heavy wood door. The guards on either side weren't at attention. Like most of the former gladiators, they lounged against the wall, but both made a point of smiling at Joseph. The kid grinned back, thrilled to be noticed. A moment later, the door cracked open.
"We're in a meeting," the boyar snapped.
"Yes, my lord," Cherry told him. "But the Dom asked me to handle something and said to bring Joseph to him if I needed to."
From farther back in the room, Theodian yelled, "Come here, Joseph. Don't let that nobleman scare you off."
There was a pause, then Theodian pulled the door open wider.
"I'll take care of him, Cherry. You see something?"
She bobbed her head quickly. "They're moving into place. Looks like another attack in the morning, and I need to talk to the men, sir."
"Okay."
His eyes flicked over her shoulder.
"Crow, make sure the men knows she's the wolf's assistant and tell them to watch their language."
"Yes, sir,"
Crow promised,
then gestured toward the stairs one more time. Cherry turned, but Crow offered his arm like a proper gentleman. With a blush, she took it. The young man couldn't be much older than her, maybe 19 at most, but Theodian had made it very clear that when he said partner to heart, he didn't mean just a fight. The only thing that confused her was the difference in age between the two men. Hart had to be nearly 30, and he was a big, strong man. Crow, however, was lithe and handsome. She would have assumed he could attract a much more attractive partner, but it sounded like the games didn't always give the gladiators that option. Oddly, that only made her appreciate what Laylee had done even more. She hadn't just allowed herself to be chained to anyone. That woman had manipulated the system for her advantage. Now, if Nora Haim was lucky, she'd find a way to do the same in Rhea and save them all.
"Miss Cherry," Crow asked when they were at the bottom of the stairs. "You seem to be a well-bred lady, ma'am. I just want to prepare you for the barracks. The fighters, they don't bother with manners, and most of us have seen each other at our worst. It might be more than you're expecting."
"I know," she assured him, "but I have to learn one day. I'll probably blush, but the Queen asked me to help, and this seems to be what I'm good at."
"Nah, you're good at a lot of things, ma'am. This is just the one that'll make you get noticed, but don't worry. I'll try to make it clear that you're a lady."
He smiled at her.
"And so you know, she's the wolf. That's what we gladiators call her because it makes her ours."
"The wolf of Oberheim," she quoted, having heard it often enough. "The gladiator queen, which means you're a queen?"
"Yes, ma'am. The only person who salutes our time on the sands instead of looking down at us for it. No matter how those men talk in there, you just need to remember that. They all love her because she's doing something for us. She's making us people again."
"Has," she licked her lips, trying to figure out how to ask her next question. "Do they know about me?"
"You mean that you're queer?" he asked. "No, ma'am. Storm hasn't said anything, and Theodian said we shouldn't, so no one has. He said that's your business, so we left it at that."
"Thank you." But the truth was that she wished they knew. For the first time in her life, things would be easier for her if the rough men inside the barracks understood she had no interest in them. They wouldn't make crass comments or try to flirt with her. Instead, if she was lucky, they'd show her the same respect they did Hart and Crow. But it was too late to do anything about it. She'd just have to learn how to ignore the leering and find a way to get the answers she needed. Before she was ready, Crow was opening the main door and waving her inside. Unlike the Citadel, or any other home she'd been in, the barracks didn't have a formal entry. On the other side of the main door was nothing but one massive room, with cots spaced evenly throughout. At the side were a row of tables, and the doors at the back hinted at a kitchen area, but it was huge. Although, the moment she stepped in, everyone noticed. Slowly, the rumble of conversations began to die, silence spreading out like a wave. Dozens of heads turned to look, but nothing else. The bare-chested men made no move to cover themselves. The few women glared at her like she was the enemy. Then there was the tub at the side with a man bathing in it, not caring at all about who could see his nudity. Cherry's cheeks began to grow hot. Crow came to her rescue.
"This is the wolf's assistant," he bellowed. "Miss Cherry's here to talk to us. She's a real lady, so treat her like one and not like the sluts we're used to." "You know the wolf, huh?"
a man asked from the table to her left. Cherry nodded. "I'm her maid, sir. I'd like to think her friend, too."
So you're the lion's girl."
Her face got even warmer. "His friend, yes."
"Thought you two were courting," the man teased.
Cherry lifted her chin and met his eyes. "Yes, sir. So do all the nobles in the palace, but they aren't gladiators now, are they?" And just like that, everyone began to laugh and nod. The tension she'd felt when she'd first walked in vanished, as if they'd given her permission to be a part of their group. It felt strangely euphoric, and all because she dared to speak up. It was the last bit of confidence she needed. Walking over to the table, she sat across from the man, aware that Crow was still following like a shadow. A few others began to move closer, but she didn't feel threatened, more like they were simply curious, and right about now that would work to her advantage.
"The wolf," she began, "always says that gladiators fight dirty. She says that's what makes you all so dangerous, but I'm not really sure what that means, sir. The Dom, I mean Theodian, wants me to come up with a way to keep Rhea on their side of the border, but I honestly have no idea what you all can do, and Layli..." "The wolf always said that a gladiator needs to know her weapons."
"Miss Cherry, is it?" the man asked.
When she nodded, he continued.
"We kill people, make spectacles, and basically cause a lot of disruptions. See, in these proper wars, gentlemen pride themselves on some kind of honor code. Us? We pride ourselves on staying alive and doing whatever we have to so we won't die."
"Okay," she chewed at her lower lip. "Well, Rhea's moving some large weaponry on the other side of that ridge. I'm not sure, but I think it might be siege engines, and I'm willing to bet they'll assemble it after nightfall. Any ideas?"
The man leaned closer and offered his hand.
"It's Ram, by the way, and yeah, I got one. See, on the sands, the only rule is that we wait for the gong. That happened a few days ago, and you people call it parley. Now, for us, this is just a breather between rounds, so why can't we fight in the dark? And why the hell do we need to stay on our side?"
Her hand flew to her lips.
"You mean sneak across the border and destroy their weapons in the middle of the night?"
His eyes narrowed.
"Sure. Don't look so disgusted, girl. There's nothing honorable about waiting to die."
"No," she assured him. "I just couldn't believe I didn't think of it myself. I mean, that makes so much more sense than what we're doing now."
Pausing, she leaned back to look at the rest of the room.
"Think there are enough people in here to hit the camps, too? Scatter the horses, burn the tents, and cause a complete mess that will keep them from attacking for a few more days?"
Ram chuckled, but nodded.
"Yeah."
Then he patted her arm.
"You know, you kind of remind me of the wolf, all pretty and delicate until the fangs come out. Tell me, Miss Cherry, if you'd been a gladiator, what name would you have used?"
She thought for a moment, then looked up with a smile.
"I think I would have been Dove, sir. Dove of Oberheim."
"That bird of peace."
She shrugged.
"Seems to me like it's the kind of name that would make my enemies underestimate me. The dove may be small and pretty, but it's also what comes at the end when everything is said and done. It's the goal I think we're all hoping for."
"Yeah," he mumbled, then rubbed her forearm. "Well, Dove of Oberheim, I figure I should tell you that I met the wolf once on the night she arrived at Theodian's camp, and she would never call me a friend. I did some things back then that I'm not proud of, but desperate times have a way of making men into monsters."
"And yet she still forgave you."
Cherry lifted her voice so it would carry a bit.
"She forgave all of us, and all she's ever asked is that we help her. I may not know how to swing a sword yet, but she wants me to find another way, one that will keep her people alive.
She turned to look at the faces of the people around them.
She meant you, her gladiators. Will you all do this? Help me keep Rhea so confused that they can't hurt the innocent men, women, and children in town? I know you've all given so much, and for a system that didn't care about you at all, but if we can do this, then things will finally have a chance to change.
Crow's hand dropped onto her shoulder.
I'll fight for you, Miss Cherry.
And I'll fight for the wolf,
someone else called back. Slowly, one by one, the gladiators began to say the same, each one citing their own reasons, but it didn't matter why. They were going to fight, and if she had anything to do about it, they would win. Then, when the queen returned, she'd find Lanmont was exactly the same as she'd left it. Then Ram stood, looking right at her.
I'll fight, but not for the wolf and not for any of this other shit. I'll fight because I think you're right. I think that if we can win this, we might actually have a place to call home. You just better make sure we have a damned good plan, girl.
Cherry nodded, hoping she could actually make this happen. Most of all, because she was quickly growing fond of Lanmont. This province was nothing like anywhere else she'd ever been, and yet it was the one place she didn't feel like an outsider. Chapter 44. It was dark that night. The moon had set early, making it even easier to see the torches the Rheons carried. On the top floor of the citadel, the wind was sharp, cutting right through her dress, but Cherry didn't care. Somewhere out there were Crow and Hart, people she thought of as friends, and if this went wrong, she'd never see them again. Never mind all the rest of the men she'd sent out to risk their lives. Coming up behind her, the Odeon eased a cloak onto her shoulders.
It'll be a while yet.
I know, she assured him as she pulled it closer around her neck. But it makes me feel better to watch. Makes it easier to imagine what they must be looking at and how scared they probably are. He gently rubbed her back.
But fear is a double-edged sword. It gives as much strength as it takes away. The trick is to learn how to control it.
I'm trying, she mumbled. He chuckled softly.
I know. Cherry, you did good with the men today. Had a few of them tell me they like my new lady.
I'm still not a lady. He paused, the sound of the wind filling in the silence.
You could be, he finally replied.
What? The Odeon took a deep breath, but his eyes moved to survey the darkness for himself.
You've been here over a week. I've watched you with Crush's boy, my gladiators, and even the kitchen girls. You're as much a lady as I am a lord, and it got me thinking.
She felt her guts tense. About. Slowly, he turned to lean his back against the banister.
About how very young you are, how old I am, and what will happen to Lanmont after me. Cherry plagues a good man, but he doesn't know anything about being noble. Things seem to be going well with you and Storm, but there's no guarantee they'll stay like that. You deserve some place where you can be, well, you.
I have it. I serve the queen. He took a deep breath.
Yes, well, it seems someone has been talking about a secret relationship between the lion and the wolf. If I had to guess, I'd say one of the boyars. The strangest part is that no one is all that bothered by it, but that means they know your relationship with him is a sham, or at least they'll think so.
She shrugged. It kinda is, but I'm still her maid.
And you could be so much more.
He gestured back toward the massive stone building beneath them.
The gladiators respect you, Cherry. They also won't care about you and Storm, and she's not the only woman in those barracks you might be interested in.
Not liking where this was going, she turned her eyes back out to the black distance. What are you saying, Theo? He flashed her a smile at the use of his shortened name.
I'm saying I think you'd make the perfect Domna. No, I'm not going to ask you to marry me yet, but I'm asking you to think about it. I already have an heir, and I'm not about to replace him. I just need a partner, someone to help me run this place without making a mess of it, and I've seen how much having a brilliant woman around can help.
You mean Laylee?
Yeah.
He scratched awkwardly at his hair.
She helped the gladiators, and I think you can do the same. You could help me with the treasury, and the guys clearly accept your orders.
He gestured back toward the border where the gladiators were moving into position.
Besides, another woman in control of her own life might speed up the changes Laylee's been working toward. So think about it.
Shifting a little closer, she asked, You mean a marriage like Laylee and Connell have?
Yeah. Friends like that. And I just figured that if you're Domna, then we could make it very hard for your father to refuse.
That sounded tempting. In all honesty, it sounded almost too good to be true. She knew there should be a catch, but this was Theodian, and he didn't work like that. Besides, she actually liked this place. If she stopped thinking about what everyone else expected of her, then the truth was that she might even like it here. A smile began to curl her lips higher. And I could see my brothers again? My mother?
Anytime you wanted. And you wouldn't have to hide the woman in your rooms, either. Then, when I'm gone, I'll still know there's someone to watch out for Plague and help him be the next Dom.
Okay. His head twitched in surprise, and he blinked.
Okay, what?
Okay, I'll marry you, but not too soon. I mean, like, maybe we can take our time about it, and you can help me learn how to be brave. She ducked her head, but the smile was still there. And maybe how to use my sword?
I'd do that anyway, he promised. But we still have to get Laylee's approval, and we'll need someone to act as your guardian.
Tristan, she decided. Or maybe Connell? Theodian laughed.
Either one would be rather impressive. You know that, right? Most girls can't just ask the co-ruler of the country to give them away.
She nodded. Yep, and then my father couldn't complain. I mean, if the prince consort or the queen Secor approved of it, that'd be almost the same as her approval. He'd have to claim me again, which means he couldn't keep me from my family.
And I wouldn't ask you to change at all. My men know I have no interest in a lover, and I would never ask you to pretend otherwise. If you and Storm decide to make a life together, then you'd be able to do it openly, or any other woman you happen to fall for. At your age, you have enough time to still change your mind, and I wouldn't try to force you into anything.
I know, she assured him. You're the nicest man I've ever... Something at the corner of her eye made Cherry's head whip around. There, in the darkness, was a small flame, but it was growing. Beside her, the Odeon clutched the banister, leaning out as if he could help, but they were just there to watch, to make plans for what would come the next morning. When nothing else happened, Cherry's heart began to beat faster, and then more fires appeared. One after the other, near and far, the gladiators were putting the first stage of her plan into motion. This far away, the closest Rions were little more than specks, silhouetted before the flames, but she could still hear the cries of battle. Soft, they were just a whine on the wind, but it was the proof her mind needed to know this was really happening. To the right, the second siege engine caught, and the flames grew quickly. "Where are the archers?" she hissed. The Odeon's hand clasped her shoulder.
Ace is out there with her hunters. I wouldn't be shocked if they loose a volley in the dark first.
But we need to destroy the camps, Cherry told him. This won't work if we just attack. We have to create so much chaos that it'll take days to sort themselves out.
And battles happen a lot slower on the sidelines.
Shifting closer, he dropped an arm over her shoulder and pointed.
See that light way out there? That's the main camp. If that one is hit first, they won't come to support the others. Trust the men, Cherry. Those men have done this before.
This? She asked. They've attacked Rions? He chuckled.
Fake Rions, but yeah, it's pretty much the same. Some of them have also started revolts in their camps. That's how I got them.
I can't watch. She turned for the room behind them, but Theodian caught her arm.
You can, and you owe it to your fighters. They're risking their lives. The least we can do is bear witness. Now, come over here and help me keep track of this.
In the darkness, that was easier said than done. The only real hint of what was happening were the flames, but they weren't the only thing. The yells made it clear Rions had found their weapons, and pricks of light pointed out soldiers running messages in the camps. As Cherry watched, she realized the torches always stopped. First they'd be moving, and then they'd just stop and burn in place, which meant the men carrying them had fallen.
"The archers are taking out the messengers," she gasped.
How can you be sure?
She pointed.
Watch the torches. They come out of a tent, I'm assuming, and then stop in the middle of camp. I don't think that many men are just dropping them.
No, and he pointed toward the north. I think those are horses.
Yes! She jumped in a circle like a miniature celebration. It'll take a day or more to catch all of them. And the catapults?
Trebuchets, he corrected. The southern one went out, but I think the rest are useless.
Come on, Cherry breathed. Relight it, burn it. If one survives, they can breach our walls.
And that's when a million sparks erupted and launched into the air. As if day had come early, Cherry could finally see the battle playing out beneath them. Just before those tar-soaked arrows embedded themselves into hundreds of Rion canvas tents. A moment later, it happened again, proving that chaos really had descended.
I told you Aesa would handle it, Theodian said as he rubbed her shoulder. Now to get them all home.
But Cherry was still watching the last siege engine.
Burn, she whispered over and over. Someone has to make it burn.
Like a prayer had been answered, one lone arrow sailed toward it, the almost blue flames nearly going out as it sailed through the air. Then it thunked solidly into the side. There was no way it'd be enough, and yet the fire began to grow. Slowly, as if trying to hide from the attention of those who would extinguish it, that first light grew bolder, shifting from pale yellow to orange, until one whole beam began to crackle.
They got it, she yelled, turning to throw her arms around Theodian's neck. Rhea can't hit the Citadel now.
His arms wrapped around her back and he lifted, spinning her in place. Both of them laughed, knowing their plan had truly worked. For a few more days, at least, Norheim would be safe. Those few days might just be long enough for Layli to stop this war.
And all those men will know that you, Cherry Butrachini, just saved Lanmont, maybe even all of Norheim.
He hugged her tightly.
I'll make damn sure your father knows that.
Thank you, she breathed into his shoulder. Thank you for believing in me.
He carefully set her down and bent to look in her face.
Always. I can promise you that I will always believe in you, and I will always be your friend. All I ask is that you keep doing this.
He grinned.
That you keep taking care of my family.
I swear.
Yeah.
He turned her back to the battle.
Been a very long time since I had a partner.
Then he dropped his voice.
Forgive me, Tornado. She'll never be you, but it's nice to have a friend again.
Gently, she reached up for his hand.
Maybe you can tell me about him.
I think I'd kinda like that.
She lightly bumped his shoulder.
Me too. It might be nice to finally have someone I can actually talk to.
Maybe even someone you can trust?
Yeah.
She sighed, feeling like years of oppression left with her breath. Someone who believes in me enough to remind me that I can believe in myself. He nodded.
Me too. I think you'll make a damned good partner and an even better Domna.
If Layli approves.
He flashed her a devious smile.
Oh, she'll approve. Trust me.
Chapter 45. Just before noon, on the 13th day of their journey, traffic began to appear. 3 hours later, Layli knew why. The tallest spires of Rhea Dusu peaked above the trees. She wasn't the only one to murmur in appreciation, which made Death laugh.
The City of Light, he declared, gesturing to the towers. The ancients cut blocks of crystal to make those. Light shines through and reflects off them, leaving the entire city looking like the sun coming through stained glass.
It's beautiful, Essa said. And people live in those?
No, he assured her. The towers are dedicated to the gods. The topaz is for chaos, and the white quartz is orders. Green is health, blue is peace, and pink is fate. There are some smaller ones you can't see from here, but those are for the main gods. And the Senate? Connell asked.
Death smiled proudly.
That isn't nearly as grand, but it's a large marble dome, unlike anything you have in Norheim. The stories say the gods had to help build it because no man could create the Ark without divine help.
He glanced over to Essa.
This is my home. It's where I grew up, and what I know is normal. I hope you like it. And if she doesn't, Tristan teased.
Hush, Essa snapped. I think it's pretty, and better than the camps those tribesmen keep up north. Layli, have you been here before?
Nope. Her eyes were locked on the glittering towers.
Kale came here when he was a boy, but no one thought I'd need to worry about politics.
Well, Death said, waving to Modio and the second cart closer.
When they were in range, she went on.
The problem is going to be getting through the gates. They'll check to make sure we're honest traders. Which of you is fluent in Riok? Not just able to speak a few words, but completely fluent.
I am, Layli promised. Learned it with Hamish, so I've always spoken it.
Dario gestured between his own chest and his sister.
Essa and I were taught. We have more of an accent than Layli, but I think we're fluent.
Connell shook his head, but Timodio lifted a finger.
Grew up on the border. I'm not as well spoken as Layli, but I usually talk to farmers and merchants.
The rest shook their heads.
Okay, then for the next bit, Layli's my wife. Sit up here behind me. We have a contract with Portia Gaius for livestock fodder, but the paper was stolen with a bag of coin in Ostia. That's almost straight west of Oberheim, so they won't expect us to know anything about the conflict in Lanmont. Dario, you're my driver. Essa's my sister-in-law, and Timotio's our guardsman. The rest of you are just help hired to lift things, and your wives are being paid to cook and clean along the way. The more you act like country farmers, the easier this will be.
Right, Tristan agreed.
Be big and strong. I think we can manage.
Death looked at Layli.
And do not be meek. Women are very outspoken in Rhea.
I'm liking it here more and more, Essa said. Soon enough, they found themselves in a line, waiting to be admitted into the capital of Rhea. Most traffic kept going, but the signs warned that all foreign visitors and merchants must be declared before access was granted. Now, Layli understood just how easy it would be for Vinko to keep any competition out before the vote. On the heels of that was another realization. Death's name wouldn't do him any good right now.
You're Maxim Tenicus, she hissed.
Plague shot her a confused look.
Then who am I?
I don't know, Theodian, she suggested.
Plague shrugged. Not using the name of a known dom. I'll think of something.
Then it was their turn. A dark-skinned man waved them forward and held out his hand, clearly expecting papers. Death lifted his, showing it was empty. Realizing this wasn't standard, the Rion moved to the side of the cart, and at least four other guards began to close in on them.
Our papers and some coin were stolen in Ostia, Death explained in the local language. My wife left the room unlocked when we had dinner.
I did not, Layli hissed. I told you they picked it.
And we're still out 1,000 crowns.
He sighed and looked back to the man.
Our contract is with Portia Gaius for 1/2 ton of livestock fodder, if you need to verify it.
The man looked back into the cart.
Doesn't look like 1/2 ton.
Death pointed to the cart behind them.
1/4 ton in each. Ah, so both are yours. Yes, sir.
The other guards began to relax, but still didn't move away.
Have any valuables to declare? The Rion asked.
Death smiled.
Lockbox right under my seat. Have a few nice dresses for my wife and her sister in there. Promised them I'd show them the Grand Avenue and let them shop, but besides that and coin for the return trip, no. And you weren't counting on the income from the trade.
Slowly, Death glanced away.
Sir, I've been cheated trading in Riaduso before. Like to make sure I can make it home if it happens again. When the trade's good, it's real good, but sometimes it goes the other way.
The guardsman took a deep breath.
Are you accusing the Caesar's wife of cheating you? No, sir. Never done business with her before, sir. I'm saying that I sold some wool to a man in the Shadow of Fate, and he refused to take my goods after I came all the way here. Said if I was desperate to empty my carts, he'd pay me 1/10 of the price. Learned my lesson hard.
The Rion bent to look under the cart, still talking.
And who are you supposed to meet at the Gaius residence? I think his name is Cicero, Cerciro, something like that. The contract called him the head of the house. Cicero, the guard told him. And he's getting up there in age. Should I assume you're all from Noraheim? You have the accent.
Death's eyebrows lifted.
Really?
Yes, Maxon, Layli said. You've been speaking too much Hamish.
The guard flashed her a smile.
So you're from Noraheim?
I am.
Grew up in Oberheim, but we moved closer to the border when I married Maxon.
Ah.
His eyes shifted to Death.
So you're Rion.
By birth,
Death agreed.
Served my 2 years with the armies, and I decided I wanted to try farming. You know how cheap land is in Noraheim?
The guard chuckled.
Yeah, but you have to put up with the culture to get it.
Then he stepped back.
I assume you know the way to the Gaius house.
Yes, sir,
Death assured him.
No one who's ever been to Riadusu before could miss it.
Exactly,
the guard said.
Have a good day.
And then he looked at the next group in line, waving them forward. Laylee didn't dare say a word. That had been much too easy. She'd half expected some fiasco for the lost papers, or for the guards to send a messenger to verify their deal with Portia Gaius, or something. Instead, they'd asked seemingly innocuous questions and just let them go.
Relax, Death told her, reverting to Hamish. They're not going to follow us.
But what was the point of that, she asked. Why stop so many merchants if they don't really care about the answers? Death turned around to face her.
Laylee, they do care. They verified our nationalities, where we're going, and the length of our stay. They were waiting for anything that didn't fit with what's expected of grain merchants, but we covered it all. My Rian ancestry explains why we sell here. Your Noraheim lineage says why we live there, and we didn't try to hide the valuables, which anyone cheating his taxes never would have mentioned. Dropping that we lost so much in Ostia, it convinced them we've done this before, and my knowledge of the city proved it. In other words, Dario asked, unlikely to be a threat and very likely to be profitable?
Exactly.
Great,
Dario muttered. And now tell me where I'm taking this team. Death reclined into the seat.
Straight ahead, my friend, all the way until you run into the palace. Then we stop, because that's where the Caesar of Rhea built his house, right at the end of the roads that was created to conquer the world.
The most impressive thing was that he didn't exaggerate at all. The house really was a palace and almost as big as the capital of Oberheim. The road didn't exactly end, because another street headed off to the north and south, but straight before them was the entrance to Claudius's childhood home, a place he hadn't been in many years. No matter how hard he tried to hide it, Laylee could still see the nervousness in his eyes. They were halfway up the drive when guards moved to block their path. Dozens of them, all armed with long spikes. Death lifted a hand, showing he saw them, and told Dario to stop when they were within speaking distance. The moment the first cart came to a halt, one man came forward, his sword drawn.
"State your business,"
he demanded. Death showed his open palms.
"I come with a gift for Portia Gaius. We're not expecting a delivery, and she has no need of cheap grain."
"Didn't say it was grain."
He gestured to the house.
"Go get her and she'll confirm it. Or Cicero, if you want to keep her safe. The old man can verify just as easily."
The guard stared for a moment, looking over Death.
"And what exactly should I tell her to expect?" "A present from Noraheim. She should know what that means."
The apparent leader snapped off an order, and a man at the back ran toward the house. None of Laylee's friends said a word. Then again, half of them probably hadn't understood the conversation. In perfect silence, they just waited, hoping the woman wouldn't send them away. As the minutes stretched on, Laylee prayed her father's letter had actually made it here, and that Portia really did expect them. But there was nothing to be done about it now. The wait seemed to last forever, but the guards didn't move. Each time someone shifted in the cart, every eye jumped to them, convincing the Norhamers to sit as quietly as possible. Then, just when Laylee was sure they should turn back and try something else, the massive front door swung open. The woman who stepped out was everything a queen should be, including the perfectly white hair cut in the same style as her son's. She walked forward as if this were nothing, but as she reached the outermost guard, she saw him. Long, slender fingers moved to cover her lips, and Portia's steps lengthened. Twisting her shoulders, she pushed through the line and then couldn't stop herself. She broke into a jog, reaching one hand out for her long-lost son.
"Claudius," she gasped.
"Mother,"
he sighed, jumping off the cart to wrap her in his arms.
"Oh, Mother, I'm sorry I was gone so long, but I had to."
"I know, baby."
She held him like she was afraid he would vanish.
Oh, I know, and your father finally realized you were right. He's dead, Claudius. He died, but he told me that if I ever saw you again, he wanted you to know you were right, and he was so proud of you for standing up to him.
Really? Death leaned back. Mother, you don't have to make me feel better. He hated me.
No, baby, he didn't hate you. He wanted to train you to do what was good for the Empire. I think it impressed him even more that he couldn't. Now come in, boy. We can't have you out here. She dropped her voice. You can't be seen before the election. Send your staff to the back and we'll feed them and pay them for their help.
He turned back to the cart.
Mother, I want to introduce you to my future wife, Princess Alessia Arevati, and her sister.
Portia gave her son a confused look.
Alessia? I don't recognize that name.
I'm the illegitimate daughter, Essa told her. The official one is my sister, Layli.
Madam Gaius, Layli said, dipping her head in respect.
The words that came from Portia's mouth were vulgar enough that Layli couldn't translate them all, but the point was clear.
Get those carts in the back, she told the closest soldier. And not a word of this leaves the property. If anyone asks, I'm hosting the Norheim delegation.
Because, Layli added in the same language, we were invited by the Rion envoy to celebrate the election.
Yes, that.
Then she waved her son toward the cart.
Bring them in the back, through the servant's entrance so they won't draw too much notice, and have someone stack the grain in the barn. You, soldiers, go with them, and do not let those women strain themselves. These are guests, the esteemed kind, and I expect you to treat them like such.
Yes, ma'am, the leader assured her.
Then he looked at Dario.
If you'll bring the carts this way.
Chapter 46. The first thing Portia offered was a bath and a proper set of clothes, while what they'd brought was laundered. The Caesar's widow didn't ask titles or ranks. She treated all of them the same and pampered them as if they were royalty. Women were led to one bathing area and men to another. Unlike in Norheim, the Rions had entire rooms made of pools for communal cleansing, and the girls did their best to clean each other's backs and hair. When they stepped out, it was to find soft towels and local dresses waiting, along with a collection of any perfumes and cosmetics they could want. Layli assumed the men were enjoying the same luxury. After almost 2 weeks on the road, it was very much appreciated. Dressed, the women were escorted into a massive sitting room. While the walls were made of stone, the architecture was designed to make it feel open instead of secure. White columns divided the room into sections, and groups of couches were placed together. In the center, Portia waited, a buffet of food and wines laid out before her. The moment she saw them enter, she stood with a smile.
Come, make yourself at home.
Her words were in Riok. Thank you, Layli said, speaking for all of them. You've been very kind, Madam Gaius.
Please, it's Portia, and forgive my rudeness, but which of you is which?
I'm Leilani Arevati. This is my sister, who your son has set his eye on. And these? They're my maids and protectors in their own right. Mara, Gianna, and Astrid.
Servants, Portia asked.
Layli tilted her head from one side to the other. Technically, yes, but I prefer to think of them as friends. Astrid is Lady Oberheim, and my sister has been acknowledged and made a princess. My brother and current heirs with the men. I'm not sure if my father's letter reached you, but he abdicated his crown, and I was recently crowned.
Ah, he didn't mention that, but my congratulations. I think I'm supposed to say something about long life to the queen.
Layli waved that off. Close enough, and I wanted to tell you personally that I'm very sorry for your loss. Portia harrumphed at that.
As much as I hate to admit it, I do miss the old man, and I also don't. He was never easy to deal with, and my duty was simply to raise our son.
Then she looked at Astrid and paused before changing languages.
I am so sorry. I didn't realize that your group didn't all speak Riok.
Astrid lifted a hand.
I grew up on a farm, ma'am. My title is the Caesar's wife, she explained to the girls. Well, was. Now I am his widow until the next is elected, and then I hope to become the Caesar's mother, but that's all there is to it. I'm just Portia, or Madame Gaius, if you want to be ostentatious.
She waved to the chairs.
In Rhea, we are not so formal. Please sit and eat, and tell me how you all found my son.
The girls did, but they all looked at Layli, leaving the story to her. He was a gladiator, she explained, and he has the scars to prove it.
Oh, did he fight well?
Very, Layli assured her. He was known as Death and won more games than any other man in Norheim history. Portia's eyes narrowed.
And you're leaving out something very important. I'm in your debt, Leilani. I swear to Order herself that my intentions are just to know about my son, not to find some devious political advantage.
Layli chuckled at that. Well, your son already knows all of my secrets, so it's not that. I met him when he saved my life. I heard of him before that, though, when I was kidnapped and sold into the games to be removed from the line of succession. She licked her suddenly dry lips. They call me the Gladiator Queen because of it, but we believe that Senator Vinko is the one who convinced my cousin to do it. He bribed the Dom of Lanmont in the hopes of securing a Norheim province and being named the next heir. Portia's jaw clenched.
And he poisoned my husband. Aquilus was sure of it, but there was nothing to be done. It took a year for him to die, and we have no idea how the poison was given, so we couldn't stop it. Vinko began to push my husband to declare his son as dead at the same time. What?
The voice belonged to Death, meaning the men had entered the massive room. Like everyone else, he spoke in Hamish.
That bastard was responsible for this, too?
Politics, Portia reminded him.
It is a deadly game.
Then she looked over at Essa.
I most certainly hope I haven't scared you off. In Rhea, they rarely attack the women.
Death scoffed.
Essa can hold her own, Mother. What I need to know is when they plan to cast the vote.
Portia gestured to the open spaces around her, indicating all of Layli's companions should sit.
In 2 days. Claudius, there's no way Vinko will let you attend. He's almost convinced the Assembly that you're dead.
We've thought of that, Layli assured her. I was told I could attend. I plan to bring your son in as one of my guards. As you know, Norheimers rarely go anywhere without an entire army around them, so why not use it? Portia picked up a handful of olives and leaned back.
And once he's inside, they wouldn't dare throw him out. So I will make sure the senators know that the Queen of Norheim has arrived at my invitation and will be joining me to view the vote. Now, which of these lovely young men is your husband?
Death's laughter kept Layli from answering. He pointed back to Connell, but was grinning like he just heard the best joke.
You'll love this, Mother. The pretty one is her legal husband, but the big one is her lover. Well, the second biggest one.
Crush smiled.
I'm just the guard.
Oh,
Portia smiled at Layli.
So your country has come a long way since my last visit.
No, Death said. But Layli has. She rules, Mother. Her husband is the prince consort, not the king, but he's homosexual.
When Connell sucked in a startled breath, Death gestured to him that it was okay.
That's not done there, either, and Layli's pregnant with Tristan's child. It's a complete mess, but they make it work. She's an excellent ruler, and mean enough that Vinko's attack on Lanmont is going to fail, if it hasn't already.
It hasn't, Portia told them. Norheim mercenaries have caused heavy losses in his provincial forces, so he requested assistance from the state army. The Senate declined voting on that until the next Caesar is chosen, but Vinko insists that he's gaining ground. According to his reports, they made it across the border twice, but were pushed back both times in the night.
That's my men, Layli breathed in relief. Portia lifted a brow.
Well, your men, young lady, have earned a poor reputation in Rhea Duzu. It seems they have no problem with hacking at good soldiers in their sleep or turning the horses loose at the camps. What kind of army are you running over there?
Gladiators, Layli told her. Dirty fighters who will show Vinko's army that we barbarians have very sharp teeth. I'm not willing to surrender my country, Madame Gaius. I promise you my father was a much more civilized ruler in many ways. My only goal is to win.
And when you win, will you come to take Rhea next?
No. Layli shook her head to make the point. I want peace. Claudius wants peace. I'm willing to call him my brother-in-law and become an ally of Rhea, but I will not become a subject, especially not to a tactic that included breaking the treaty in ways just as dishonorable as those my men have been using.
It's true, Claudius told his mother. Rhian soldiers entered Norahem. How many times, Layli?
At least three, probably more.
Without either my presence or an invitation from the monarch, they attacked Layli on the road to the east of Oberheim. They met with her cousin in secret inside Norahem. Then they rode right up to a tiny village lord using the Rhian flag as a banner of peace. Our white and silver flag, mother. The same one we wave in war. Naturally, the village tried to defend itself. When Norahem met for parley, Rhea used it as an excuse to send an assassin behind their lines. We have made a history of attacking them at whim.
And how will you convince the Senate to ratify your proposal with Norahem? She asked. Those politicians only want the revenue.
I have no intention of asking. I also don't plan to bring it up until after they've realized I'm alive and still listed in my father's will. Once they name me Caesar, then I'll tell them that I've tamed Norahem. They don't need to know that Norahem has tamed us back.
Vinko will challenge you, Portia warned.
Death leaned over his knees and looked right into his mother's eyes.
There aren't many people who worry me with a sword, and two of them are sitting beside me. Have him meet me on the sands. I'll make sure he never walks off.
Well, Portia smiled.
Then the only thing we have left to worry about is where I'm going to have our guest sleep. It sounds like the queen will not be sharing a room with her husband.
No, Layli chuckled. And most of my guard and maids are married, so that's not a problem. Tristan cleared his throat.
Your brother is not married. I don't care if he's your heir. My sister is not—
Shut it, Triss, Astrid snapped. I'm sharing a bed with him. If you don't like it, you can take it up with me. Portia looked over at Layli.
You're—
Her eyes flicked to Tristan.
Lover? He doesn't like the competition.
Dario's woman is Tristan's little sister, Layli explained. He's a little overbearing when it comes to protecting those he cares about, but it's endearing.
Aren't most men, Portia agreed. I'm just happy I haven't made some horrible breach of etiquette yet. When I do, please know it's not intentional. I only ever visited your country once, and that was to convince my son that he should marry you, Leilani. Aquilius was the one who knew every custom of every country.
She paused and pulled in a deep breath.
And I was never the diplomat of the family. You okay, mother?
Death asked, reaching over to clasp her hand. Portia nodded.
I am now. Oh, baby, I'm so glad you came home. Everyone told me you must have died over there, but I just knew you were still alive. I could feel it, and I prayed you'd come back to me. I'm just worried it won't last, that you'll die in a challenge, or Vinko will have you assassinated.
Death shook his head.
Mother, everyone Layli brought with her is as good as any Rhian soldier. No one will slip into our house at night and walk out alive.
And poison, Portia asked.
They think I'm dead. Why would anyone go through that much trouble for a ghost? Layli, possibly, but those old men are too proud to assassinate a foreign leader who they think is losing, especially a woman, and we both know Vinko is doing his best to convince everyone this offensive is an easy one. It's the only way he can win.
Death smiled at her.
I don't think you have anything at all to worry about until I'm elected.
Claudius, Portia chided. I don't know how to break this to you, but it's a mother's job to worry, and one we can't ever learn how to stop.
And worry that I'll make a good Caesar. Worry about whether or not we can survive without unending expansion. Don't waste your time worrying about me, because I think the gods have something much bigger in mind than dying now. Not after everything they made me live through.
Chapter 47 On the morning of the election, the air was brisk. Layli's maids set to work making her look like the gladiator queen her country called her. Pants of gold brocade were paired with a gold tunic. Over that went a russet corset that matched her boots, and a deep crimson overskirt made it all look feminine, without restricting her movement. A decorative sword hung from her hip, but it was the crown on Layli's head that caught the eye. The only thing about her entire ensemble that didn't scream nobility was the crude wooden necklace which hung from a tarnished chain. Tristan's matched, but the rest of his attire didn't. Her guard had reverted to the black they'd worn when she was the heir, mostly so they wouldn't be confused with Rhea's preference for silver and burgundy. With Portia's help, Death and Plague wore the same. If anyone looked closely, they'd see the subtle differences in style, but the point was to keep their eyes on the queen. Even Laylee's maids had matching dresses. They'd chosen a pale rose pink to complement Laylee's crimson. Again, Portia had been instrumental in making that happen. Then there was her sister, brother, and husband. Like Laylee, Connell wore gold. Dario and Essa wore black and pink, respectively, but with gold accents. Overall, the final impression of the Norheim delegation was perfect. They looked royal. Together, they arrived early at the Senate as guests of the Caesar's widow. Portia had even gone so far as to write a formal invitation, backdated to Laylee's arrival at Lanmont. If anyone demanded to know why she was in Rhea Dusu, that would cover it, and calling the Caesar's widow a liar was considered too vulgar for any senator to consider. In other words, Laylee was greeted with false smiles and blatant stares, but no one tried to send any of her party away. Instead, they were invited to stand directly across from where the Caesar would be acknowledged. Portia gave a running explanation of what to expect and whispered Hamish. A few people glanced over at the sound of the strange language, but nothing else. Their space was blocked off with a line of columns, making a secluded area even though it had no seats. At the front was a banister to prevent the audience from pushing into the oval speaking area in the center. While Laylee watched, more Rhian citizens made their way in, most finding any empty spot they could, until she was sure the building wouldn't hold any more bodies. Then, without any fanfare, a line of men in white robes, togas, Portia called them, entered, spacing themselves equally around the Senate floor.
"What?" Death said, leaning forward to whisper in her ear. "Is Vinko?"
Portia cast him a warning look before adding,
"The one in the center is Sylvanus. He's the magistrate."
Laylee made a note of them both. Vinko was across and to Laylee's right, in a place where she had a clear view of him. Like this, he didn't seem threatening at all. His hair was still dark but receding, and his build was not that of a soldier. Then there was his smile. Unlike most of the men in the room, he honestly looked pleased to be here. Still, she'd been told he excelled at tactics, and she knew those required a quick and devious mind. She couldn't let his friendly face lull her into thinking of him as anything but a threat. Sylvanus took his place at the top of the oval as the head of this assembly. When the men were all in position, he clapped his hands together, stilling all conversation in the room. Slowly, the magistrate looked around, his eyes landing on every face in the audience. When he reached Portia, he bowed his head in a sign of respect before moving on.
"Today," he called out in his native language, "we have one order of business. Our Caesar, Aquilius Gaius, has been mourned for a month and celebrated for another. He has earned his place in history, but it is time to choose the next ruler of this great empire."
He paused, turning toward Laylee's left.
"Rhea is pleased that our Deitan ambassador has come to witness this event."
Then he shifted to face Laylee.
"And the monarch of Norheim."
Laylee looked to where the Deitan stood with his head high. Golden skin and oval eyes marked his ancestry, but his clothing was no different from anyone else's in the room. Portia noticed and leaned closer.
"He's been here for 2 decades. That man probably doesn't remember what his own country looks like."
"Ah," Laylee breathed, suddenly understanding the friendly tone the magistrate has used when mentioning him. She hadn't gotten the same consideration. Sylvanus was still talking, though. Laylee missed most of what he said, knowing it was lip service to the former Caesar's rule over the empire. Then, before Laylee expected it, the man turned and lifted a pristine scroll. Holding it up so everyone could see the intact seal, he turned from side to side as the chamber fell silent.
"This is the last testament of Aquilius Gaius."
The senator carefully broke the seal, the sound of the wax cracking audible. Then his eyes scanned down the page.
"In the hand of Aquilius, as witnessed by myself, our late Caesar has declared his wish for his son, Claudius Gaius, to assume command of the empire upon his death."
The swell of whispers was loud, moving around the oval chamber like a wave. For a moment, Laylee hoped it would be that easy, but luck was too fickle of a god. Minko's smile grew larger, and he stepped forward, pausing until Sylvanus looked at him before speaking.
It is believed that Claudius Gaius is dead. No one has seen him in 4 years, which makes the Caesar's will impossible to comply with. We will need to take nominations from the Senate.
Laylee took a breath, but Portia's hand closed on her arm as she shook her head. The gesture was clear. Not yet. Sylvanus lifted the scroll and moved into the center of the oval.
Is there anyone here who can attest to the whereabouts of the Princep Claudius Gaius?
He asked, raising his voice to carry. Portia released her hold, signaling it was finally Laylee's turn.
I can, she called out.
This time, the conversation around the room wasn't merely a whisper. It was a full-out roar as everyone expressed their shock. The crowd milled when people tried to get a view of the Norheim Queen, and Laylee stood for them, giving everyone a chance to see she wasn't about to back down. In the center, Sylvanus waved for silence, but the audience ignored him.
We will have discipline, he bellowed,
then waved again. Finally, the voices began to dim.
Queen Aravati of Norheim, you say you have seen the Princep. Are you sure of this, and can you tell us where he may be found?
The corner of Laylee's lip began to move upward, and she couldn't quite stop it.
I am quite sure of it. He traveled to Riadusu with me.
Then she stepped back. Death moved forward to take her place at the rail. His clothes were in the Norheim style, but they could all see his face. Standing beside his mother, there was no doubt the pair were related. Sylvanus's head slowly swayed from side to side as he struggled to find something to say. Vinko didn't have that problem.
How dare you enter this chamber dressed as one of them and expect any Rion to elect you a Caesar?
Death lifted a hand, begging the audience to quiet.
You, the man who violated our 20 years of peace with Norheim, ask me that. Do not pretend otherwise, Senator Vinko, because I was the one Queen Aravati came to for advice after the 3rd illegal invasion of her country, before she made any attempt to retaliate. According to the treaty my father signed, Rhea owes her country half of our annual revenue, and you want to say that my vacation harmed this country? What you have done is far, far worse. They've subverted your mind, Vinko snarled.
Laylee had heard those words before. Sucking in a breath, she stood straighter.
He did orchestrate Felino's rebellion, she breathed.
Death's lips curled into a cruel smile, the only sign he'd heard her.
No, Senator, they haven't done anything to me. Norheim didn't ask me to come to them. I was already there, learning about the one country that has managed to repel our expansion. Do you know what I find most interesting?
He leaned onto the banister, never looking away from Vinko.
But you thought no one would know how you've been systematically undermining the authority of my father for over a year. Here, before the entire Senate and all these witnesses, I call you a traitor to the Empire, and to the will of the Caesar, specifically. And you think the Senate will listen to a nomad pretending to be a barbarian? Vinko shot back. I say you are unfit, and your father would have named a new successor had he known.
That's when Portia finally spoke up.
Aquilius knew. He told his son to tame Norheim, and Claudius said it wouldn't be done through war. The last discussion my husband had with his son was how to gain access to the wealth of that coastal nation, and Claudius insisted it would take trade, not triumph. He said we needed to learn about them, not subjugate them. When my husband fell ill 1 year ago,
she put emphasis on the time.
He told me that Claudius was right. Our son was the only person who knew that sometimes negotiating is more profitable for Rhea than refusing to admit defeat. Right now, Vinko announced. I have the Norheim army in retreat. Lanmont is almost ours, and we have overcome the tactics of those filthy barbarians.
Laylee just shook her head. My view of the battle was different from yours, Senator. Then again, maybe it's because I was on the front line, not safely waiting for news in my luxurious home. According to Death, that insult should be scathing in this country.
Do not forget the Norheim attacked first, Minko warned her. Your impoverished boyaret broke the treaty between our nations, Queen Arivati.
No, she assured him. He did not, because it was already in shambles. Your house guard attacked my delegation west of Norahaim more than 4 months ago. Your spies bribed my cousin to start a coup. You, Senator Vinko, broke the treaty.